Welcome back, guys. This is the NRL Hunter podcast, and this is presented by Six Hour. I am here with the man, the myth, the legend everybody loves, Mr. Benny Cooley. Benny, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. Thanks, Travis, for having me on and getting this opportunity to be able to visit with you. You know, we're not at a match, got a little time.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, we've known each other for quite a while, but we always just talk, you know, at the matches. We text here and there every once in a while, but I think this is going to be like our first time sitting down and having a full length conversation about life. So I'm super excited to get to know you a little bit better off the range.
Yeah. Yeah. Likewise, you know, it's at the range, you run around trying to make sure that we're all doing the right things and keeping us in line and like hurting a bunch of cats, I'm sure. So yeah, it's nice to be able to visit on the side and stuff. And I feel like I'm fairly new and, you know, in this side of the house on the long range side. And I'm loving it, man. You know, my world that I come from is the three gun world. And, you know, coming over to I've always loved precision rifle. And back in the day, you know, I've been at this for quite a long time. We didn't have that many precision rifle where you were out in the field and field craft and some of the stuff that we have where you guys have, you know, ran with the NRL Hunter. And this is like game on, man. I love this. It's good stuff.
That's awesome. If you guys don't know Benny, I'm just going to kind of put this out there to begin with so you can maybe do a little bit of research while we're having the conversation. But you can go to his website, bennycooley.com, and get to know him a little bit. There's some information on him on the site and stuff of that nature. But as Benny said, you know, he came from the three-gun world. He's been shooting precision rifle for, what, 3 years?
Yeah, well, since I started the NRL Hunter stuff. I did a little bit before that. You know, back in the day, there just wasn't very many field courses, you know, and team matches and stuff like that. So, you know, my good friend Mike Voigt, we used to pair up and go crush some of those. And, you know, we just hit them in between some of the three-gun matches that we had to go do. But, yeah, doing this where there's a lot more. I always wanted to get into the PRS, but it's so, you know, specific to the equipment that you're only going to use for that sport, where the NRL Hunter, I use these guns all the time, right? So I really like the format. I was super stoked when Scott did the first one out in Colorado. Yeah. And then you taking the helm from there. You've done a fantastic job. And I think this is just going to keep growing. And it's just a win-win. I mean, I'm stoked about this type of series.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, okay, so precision rifle in 3 years. And you just took the win at the championship for the factory division. I mean, that's no small accomplishment in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I had an extensive background and it translated fairly well across, you know, follow people and see what they were doing and then just being able to put the time in and commit to it. So, you know, working, pairing up with good companies and, you know, good rifles and optics and ammunition, and that kind of just allowed me to kind of put it all together.
That's fantastic. Now, everyone's going to want to know, because gear is always a big topic in precision rifle and NRL Hunter, especially because you have to make weight and so on and so forth. And you shooting in the factory division, there's a lot of guys that are coming into the sport looking to build a factory setup. What is the setup that you are using that has brought you success?
The platform I'm using right now is a Seekins. It's called their NRL PH2. And basically, if you go to the Seekins website, they don't have it up yet, and they're trying to get that all taken care of. But anyway, they sell them in the stores. And the PH2, the NRL Hunter, they make it a 6 Creedmoor and 6.5. And what they did is they upgraded it to have an M-Lock rail system on the front and then also an Arca rail on the front of the gun, because they know a lot of the NRL Hunter and hunters like to use tripods and stuff to clamp into those things. And then they updated the trigger is all to the diamond, the Trigger Tech diamond. So that's the platform that I'm running, and those guns just flat hammer. I mean, I've shot a lot of guns over the years, and it's amazing how easy it is to get them to shoot and shoot really good.
And you're also running factory ammo.
Yes. Well, I do. I'm running factory ammo, and I've also done custom loads with the 153 A-tips, who I shot at the Grand Slam. And, you know, the A-tips, just, they're just an amazing bullet, right? The consistency on them. But I've done the same thing on practice with just factory loaded 140 ELDMs and the 147s. It's just, you can tune it down a little bit, and I'm a little bit more sensitive on the recoil and being able to call my shots. And that's something I really had to learn talking to the pros and the people who are out there and been doing it for a long time is they're so good at calling their shots, right? I mean, right. I'm like, I hit the plate someplace. Like, well, no, you hit it in the left corner, quarter inch down at 1 o'clock, right next to that bolt, right? And it's like, I can't see that. But when you tune the loads a little bit, you know, and working and stuff like that, it seems like, you know, you can get a load that you're comfortable with or the bolt configuration and speed that allows you just to be able to see something a little bit differently, right?
So how did you practice for that?
Oh, man, I just went out and went out in the country, and then I practiced a lot of missing. I mean, I sincerely did. I mean, first of all, I think a lot of guys miss getting their gun trued up at all distances. You know, they'll shoot at 100 yards and then they'll jump out to like 600, 700, 800 yards away and they'll true the gun up, right? And I think they're making mistakes on, or I know I was. And so I'd be missing targets at, you know, between 400 and 500. It's like, how am I missing those targets, right?
Right.
I just wasn't truing my gun up correctly. And then, you know, we talk about missing is after you get where you're dialed in and you've got the wind calls and everything, it's not hard to hit the target if you got a stable position. However, it's really hard to call miss, you know? So I would intentionally, you know, times I would go out and I'd just dial my windage, just not even look at it, just rip it. Shoot one shot, you know, I was going to miss, right? Look at it and try and figure out, okay, where did I miss that to make my second shot correction? You know, it's like they'll say, you can miss once, but you should never miss twice.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and so that helped me a lot. And then just practicing all the different positions, everything from the tripod, bipods, off your backs, you know, that you're using rock configuration, stuff like that. You know, shooting in where the target's against the hill so you can see what the impact looks like when you miss into rocks versus flat, you know, where you don't have a lot as far as signature of the bullet and stuff like that, even if you miss. So I did a bunch of that, and that kind of helped me quite a bit as far as the, you know, like seeing and reading what the impacts were. It allowed me to kind of pay more attention to it, I guess you could say.
So it gave you an opportunity to provide a better follow-up.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, I'm not trying to miss, but I know it's going to happen. Or what it does, it allows me to be able to call where I hit the target at.
Right.
Because sometimes, you know, you'll get in a, you know, a canyon that we're shooting across or something, and once you kind of figure out what the wind is, at least as long as you're shooting that same canyon, it'll be close to it, right? It will change some, or you may updrafts or downdrafts, stuff like that, but usually once you get that figured out where you're hitting the target, it's like then it allows you to factor that in better, right? So you don't get those first round impacts more.
Absolutely. So you used a term that is common in precision rifle, but a lot of hunters may not be aware of, and that was true up. So can you explain to the people out there, the hunters that are listening, that are trying to understand that theory? Can you explain that to them?
Yeah. I think let's back up a little bit. It's like, you know, the truing up is running off your ballistic software program. And there's two that I use. I use the Hornady FORDOP, which is my main ballistic software program that I use. I really love it. It's super accurate. And I also use Applied Ballistics. And I use them both because I think you need to have a backup, right? One is none and two is one. So
right.
What you're trying to do is you're basically trying to true up the gun's arc or the curve of the bullet or the trajectory of the bullet, whatever you want to call it. So it merges up with your ballistic software program all the way down. So everything from your environmentals to the input you put on your gun. What most people do, the common mistake is they look at their ballistics and, you know, those 0 to 100 yards, or they'll think that they're nice and zeroed up. And then they shoot it, like I was saying before, 600, 700, 800 yards away. And the common mistake that they make is they true it up by doing velocity. And usually it's not your velocity that's making you off. It's your angle of fire. So, you know, when you're shooting at 100 yards, if you shot, you know, 50 rounds, 10 five-shot groups, you pretty soon see that you're actually not dead on 100 yards. Maybe you're a quarter inch high.
Right.
So it changes, you know, the angle of attack for that bullet all the way out. And if you don't change that angle back at 100 yards, it's like building a house. You know, you start in one corner, if it's not trued up, you're a quarter inch off. By the time you get to the other side and one story up, you're like 4 inches and custom cutting every board, your windows and everything, custom the guy that started everything out, right? So it's screwing that up, and it's your line of attack, right? I call it your line of attack, but line of fire and stuff like that. So angle fire is for the Ford off. Your zero height is for applied ballistics. But most people, they immediately jump to velocity.
Velocity.
And that's what I used to do. And that kind of really, it never treated the gun up good. I mean, I never will forget, we were at Scott's match, the first year he had it out there in Colorado. And I'm smacking this plate at almost 900 yards, feeling good, hit every shot, it's like, okay, this is good. Went to my next stage, target's like 450 yards, never hit one shot.
Wow.
From okay. position, shooting eight shots at it, right? It was backed in against a cliff. So when you hit the cliff, right, when you miss the target, it spalled so much off the rocks that you really couldn't tell where my impact was.
Right.
And that's where he's shooting those little diamonds, right? Or the diamonds he had. So
right.
Pretty frustrating. And what I figured out is that, I was changing my velocity when I really should have just been changing the zero angle so that I knew what kind of angle the gun was intersecting my sights at 100, truing that up better.
So, and that's extremely important, because if you're not familiar with what that is and you don't practice that enough to see, as a hunter who goes out and shoots the rifle, once or twice a year, and then they go out on their hunt, that could be the difference between a wounded animal and a clean, ethical kill.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You bet. Yeah, it sure can. And I think most people don't understand, it's like, you can practice a lot at 100 yards. Absolutely. I mean, what people don't realize is, always trying to shoot distance, but I learned a lot of my positional shooting and being consistent at 100 yards. And, I know that if I can get rid of my environmental factors at 100 yards or 200 yards. So I know that when the gun shot high or shot left or low or whatever, it allows me to realize, or figure out that what am I doing to the gun to make it do that?
Right.
Doing something I don't know. When we shoot a distance, we say, oh, I just made a bad wind call.
And it's not always just a wind call, right? It's
right.
Your fundamentals. It's your muscle memory. It's your repetition.
Yep. Consistency. But it's a lot more easier to see that at 100 yards, right? And, when people, I made that mistake early on too, the first couple of years is, man, I just want to go out and get a distance and shoot targets. And I kind of pulled back in at 100 yards and, everything from my tripods to, real high awkward positions. And then you could see it, right? You're shooting groups and practicing, getting into position, stuff like that. So that helped a lot. That made me a lot more consistent. I basically shoot the same where I'm prone or standing. My hold's the same. And I'll talk to some guys like, well, if I shoot a bag off of a rock, I'm, I got to hold 2/10 or 3/10 low because the gun's going to rock on me, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to shoot high. And it's like, I've kind of ironed that out where it's basically the same hold no matter where I'm at, what position.
That's fantastic. So you talk about shooting off of a tripod, and in the NRL Hunter, I think this sport has really brought to light the utilitarianness of a tripod, the many different ways that it can be utilized. I never shot three gun, but in three gun, you're not using a tripod for anything, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it was never even a tool in your kit. Coming to the precision rifle world and learning to use a tripod, what do you think, looking back, would be the best advice you can give to somebody? Because this was actually just brought up on the social media when people were asking what tripod and how to use it. So what would you say to that person?
Well, man, tripods are critical, and buy once, cry once.
Yep.
Buy the best that you can afford. There's a lot of good tripods out there. I use the RRS stuff, and I really like it, but there's other tripods out there, that are good for the money. Don't go cheap on them. Like I said before, cry once, buy once, cry once type of deal. You'll be beneficial to you as you progress. In the three gun world, going to a tripod in a kneeling position was kind of like shooting three gun because we braced off structures. So we bring our rear leg up, you'll see a lot of traditional guys on your tripod, they're putting one leg up front and two legs in the back.
Right.
And that's good. It's not as proficient for me or as fast because in the NRL Hunter, right, you're under the clock And so with the leg coming back to me in my reverse kneel position, I can just sit up so much faster and I'm just as steady. I have no problem controlling recoil on the gun or anything else. So the tripods are just, man, they are critical. Everything from, well, let's back up, not just the shooting, but finding the targets.
Yes.
I need a stable platform. And you see, people putting their tripods, people who don't use their tripods to set their spotting binoculars up on rangefinder and stuff like that, they'll struggle to find the targets, or what they'll do is they'll miss ranging the targets. So they're not actually shooting the true distance. So the tripod is just critical. And I use it all the time. Hunting and spotting now, I'm never without my tripod just because it's so easy to set and spot things. And there's other things in my kit that I'll sacrifice before I'll sacrifice that, as far as weight and everything. It's just so
Right.
versatile. And I live out here in Idaho, out in the West, and most of the time you're not on top of a ridge top. You're down the bottom or on the side of a hill or something. You got brush and everything from spotting, or when you do find the game, you can't go prone, right? You just
Right. You
can't
just,
hit
yeah.
that position to be able to make the shot in the time that you need to sometimes. So yeah, but
So
real proficient with them.
it was also asked to me, and I know, what I do, but curious for you. Do you use the same tripod when you go hunting as when you compete in NRL Hunter, or are they two different tripods because of whatever?
Yeah, I use the same tripod.
Okay.
Now I take that back. On the last match, I just won the single pull, single leg pull, the tall RRS one.
The inverted one, yeah.
It's and I used it. I think it's great for glassing. Right now it's too high and I want to cut the legs, right? To get a little bit
Don't
lower. I'm scared to, right? I'm scared
cut
to cut.
the
Them. Yeah.
Oh, dude, have you seen? You haven't seen the new one?
I have seen them. Yeah.
So,
I need to take a trip down there to Salt Lake and play with them a little bit.
I know this is an audio podcast, but if Benny hasn't seen it, this is the shorter ones. This is the new RRS ones that go. They extend, so it's perfect for like a tall kneeling, like tall kneeling on your knees.
Yeah.
And then this is, I think, the tall one that you have back there in the video or in your office there.
Yeah,
So
and
the twin shorter one.
I would never buy a tripod that I couldn't go standing with. That's just my advice, right? If I could only buy one, I'd want one I could go standing with. So I have the original, double pull legs, which is just a little bit short for standing when I'm
Right.
shooting, stuff like that. But I can stand with it and spot, because a lot of times, when you're spotting in the mountains and stuff like that, you don't want to sit down in the snow, or you're standing up where you can see more down off the side of the mountains and stuff. So I want my tripod to be able to reach high enough, Now, if I had the money and, could afford it, then yeah, you could buy the right tool for the
But
right.
I mean, you could still use the tall one and get it down low enough that you could get into a comfortable position.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you're only packing, I think, like 8 ounces, 10 ounces more.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. So was it a hard transition coming from three gun to NRL Hunter, or were you able to take some of the disciplines and some of the skills that you learned from three gun and convert those over?
I was able to convert most of it. What the hard part was is, re reading the wind, knowing the environment. I mean, there was so much on just the environmental conditions that I was lacking and still feel like I'm lacking, right? I mean, there's guys out there way better than me at doing that stuff. And but yeah, that was the biggest jump. I knew how to shoot the gun accurately. Now, in some of the different positions, there were some things I had to learn how to be able to dress the bolt gun differently a little bit, but it wasn't a big power curve on that. The
Okay.
power curve was how to true the gun up correctly, how to find your targets right in a timely fashion, and then reading what's going on downrange, right? I mean,
Right.
bolt jump is real, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
I remember shooting a loophole match this last year, and it was probably one of the harder matches for me because we had so much updraft in different places, and it just kicked my butt, right? That's shoot very on top of the target and immediately make a correction, shoot underneath the target, you know. And right. But everybody was dealing with it. There were some people just dealt with it a lot better than I did. And that's, you know, good for them. But I learned a lot. Man, did I learn a lot after that match on what, how much the wind can lift you and stuff or push right. you down.
Well, that match was unique because majority of that match, you were shooting across a canyon.
Yeah.
And that's where you would get a lot of those updrafts and you'd get a lot of those different, you know, tricky winds. Because you were shooting across a canyon, you could see kind of what the wind was doing where your target was, but it was hard to see what it was doing underneath you and what that would cause your bullet to do by the time it reached the other side of that canyon.
Yeah. And you know, for new shooters, one thing I learned too is like, you still find this, like, trust yourself. I mean, because I'd shoot high and think, oh, I didn't have a good mount on the gun, right? And I'm rock solid. It's like, I'm thinking, well, it must be me. You know, it couldn't be that. There's no way that could happen. It's like, oh yeah, it just happened again and again and again. It's like, you're an idiot. Start trusting, right, what you're seeing and stuff. But it was I really learned a lot. And that's one thing, it is so unique. I mean, people just don't understand the opportunity they're having. Where we've shot all across, you know, from Wyoming, Oregon, Idaho, Colorado, different places, Montana, man, the environments that we've shot in, I've learned so much about looking at terrain and seeing how that terrain will affect the wind, and which affects, you know, your accuracy downrange. And the country that we've shot in has just been just stunningly beautiful. I mean, it's epic. Yeah. Some of the things and places where we go shoot.
Yeah. Some of these venues are just breathtaking. I mean, it's places that I would go just to escape, rifle match or not. I would go just to hang out because they're so beautiful, so epic, so quiet. You know, yeah. I mean, minus all the gunfire. But when we get there early in the morning and no one's on the range shooting yet, it's just like a little piece of heaven. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, and for you new shooters out there, I mean, the skills division is the heat. And, you know, I really liked shooting with people in the skills division. I was fortunate to be able to, you know, shoot with several groups that I was able to go back and help them, right? I mean, right. To me, knowledge is not shared as ignorance.
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm going to give back what people have given to me as much as I can. There's, you know, it's, you just got to put in the hard work. There's no secrets to it. Help the young shooters out or the newer shooters, right? I say young shooters. I mean, I had guys out there shooting their first NRL hunter and they're, you know, they're my age, getting out there and kicking the dog, right?
You're still young, and, brother. You're still young.
Yeah. Yeah. Young inside, right? But, This type of shooting definitely brings out the little boy in me, that's for sure. That's but yeah, awesome. The skills division is great because you can go help, right? I mean,
yes, that's the point.
Yeah, it's and I've seen some of the top pro shooters, right? They're badass and they're walking up to, you know, skill shooters and coaching them all the way through and mentoring. Man, that's a great sport to be in. That's a great people you want to be around. And it makes those individuals feel more confident to go hunting, right? And to get out and enjoy the outdoors. And, you know, they feel more confident and be able to make an ethical shot. You know, I don't think it's hard for us to remember sometimes of how nervous people can be of worrying about wounding an animal. You know, most of the time I'm never worried about wounding an animal because if I am, I just won't shoot the shot. You know, I've hunted enough and everything, or I'll wait for the conditions to change, or I'll get closer and stalk in, you know, so I feel really, really confident before I ever pull the trigger on the gun that, you know, it's going to be an ethical kill. Right. And, but it's amazing how many new shooters you have out there. They don't want to go hunting because they're worried about wounding an animal, right? Not being ethical. And this really helps them a lot. And their equipment.
Sorry, I didn't mean to speak over.
Are you good?
I couldn't agree more, and that's one of the reasons why Scott and I wanted to develop the NRL Hunter. And I mean, you know, you mentioned Scott a couple of times, and we can't forget Scott. You know, he was an integral part in getting all of this set up, and God bless him. Now he's winning trophies on the golf course in Japan or Asia or wherever the hell he's at the time. But, you know, Scott's an amazing dude. But you keep referencing these guys, you know, all these pros, and I want to say, you know, like, this is like me personally, you know, you are a legend in the three gun world. You came over to NRL Hunter and that reputation followed you. And I've always looked at you as somebody that I can always learn something something from. I'll always learn something from you. And you are the most humble dude out on that field. I mean, you, I want you to know that I recognize you every time I see you at a match. You are out there being just so cool, from the most experienced shooter to the newest guy out there to the youngest young gun out there. You have always been such a great ambassador of the shooting sport. And so to have you come in from the three gun world into the NRL Hunter Precision, you know, field style matches world, and have you here sharing your knowledge and your ambiance, you is just freaking awesome. And I love it. So thank you so much, man. I wanted to say that. I was going to say that to the end,
thank you.
It's kind of ending, but I wanted to say that you're a badass.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, man. It's you know, I'm just paying it forward. You know, I've had great mentors, and even now, I mean, every time I go out, I learn something. It's crazy. I mean, I love that part of it, is that you think you got something figured out, and then all of a sudden there's something new, right?
Right.
And it's just amazing the things that we're learning, and you know, and having such a great time at it too. So I'm looking forward to next year's schedule, right? You know, I think I want to talk a little bit about equipment too. You know, it's like,
yes,
you know, for new shooters and stuff is, you know, as you progress, right, I really think it's, you need to get a set of binos that have range finding and ballistic software capabilities, right? And man, the SIG guys just knock it out of the park. I mean, their systems that they have, you know, I will be honest, you know, all of our eyes are different. And when I first ran the SIG rangefinders, they had a little bit of a blue tint in my eyes, right? For what I was seeing. So sometimes it's hard to pick the targets up, but their rangefinder is, you know, a ballistic software program. I run the 8Ks, which I'm so glad I got this year, just a rangefinder, right? With the applied ballistics. That's my backup. So if my swallows can't hit the target, I'm immediately popping those things out for that laser.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, you got a Vortex, but you know, the Vortex 5000s are great, but the key is spend some money to where you can get binos with the rangefinder. Will be a big plus for you, not only, you know, for the matches and stuff, but also for hunting, right? I use mine for archery. I use it for everything that I'm doing out there. So, you know, when you look at it, again, you know, there's great products out there in the SIG, Vortex, you know, you got Leica, Swarovs. So it works best for your eyes, right? Yeah. And I think what SIG has done as far as their sponsorship and stuff, and man, those guys are out there at all the matches. They're just great people doing good things.
Absolutely.
Letting people shoot their stuff and being there as loaner programs and be able to help support stuff up, right? You know, like the African guys that came over and the SIGs that they, you know, SIG crosses, they went out there and shot. That was just awesome to see those guys come across and do all that stuff.
It was fantastic for sure. And, you know, Benny keeps talking about buying gear and the buy once, cry once, and absolutely, you know, buy the best that you can afford. But he also mentioned the loaner program. So the NRL Hunter, we have a loaner program that many of our sponsors donate to. And those products are, you know, to first come, first serve for members to be able to use it. If they're not used at a match by a member, they're free for anybody to use or borrow. But like SIG, we have the 3Ks, we have 10Ks. We have the RRS tripods. That's why I was showing you the new ones, because those are for the loaner program next year. Leupold just sent out their new range finding binos for the loaner program. I mean, you name it. Eberle Stock, another Idaho company, they sent 5 bags to us.
Great
so
packs.
That people... Yeah, I haven't even seen it. I think you see them before I did, because I sent them home with you. But
yeah, they're awesome. You know, and the thing that people have to understand too is, like, if you're shooting the skills division, even if we run out of loaner stuff, right? I mean, we got range finders that, you know, we pair up and it's like, I can give you the range and we write down your ballistics, right?
Right.
So for the skills division, was able to help people doing that or using my tripod. And there's lots of shooters out there. You know, it's just, I see a lot of people. I think people are nicer in the NRL Hunter than they are in the PRS. I haven't shot very much PRS, right? But you have your, well, I mean, they're out there to win, right? And they got their group that, you know, different to the PRS. I mean, It's great shooting. You know, they very challenging, you know, things that they, you know, targets and courses of fire and stuff like that. But you know, it's, you can talk to each other, right? And you can
Right.
buddy up where this is on your own. You
It
know,
is.
there in the hunter division, you don't have anybody you can go share information and say, hey, what's your wind call and
Well,
what's this? What'd you hold? And
unless you shoot teams.
that's different.
Right. But I mean, if you shoot teams, you can do all of that.
Yes. But most new
Right.
shooters don't
But.
shoot teams. You know, and even then, you know, it's just the two of you, right? And
Right.
you're sharing the information on the clock, you know,
Right.
where they're sitting back and saying, okay, I'm gonna dial this and hold this. This is what I call the wind. And yeah, but what I'm getting at is you go to the few PRS matches I've been to, you know, you got 15 spotting scopes set up and people, you know, crowding in to get up on targets you can already see where they're at. You know, nobody's talking to you. You know, it's all the secret ninja stuff. You know,
Right.
they're trying to, you know, to beat the guy beside him, right? But in NRL Hunter, I see people helping people all the time as far as gear and hey, you need to borrow this. You need this. Can I help you out? You know, the day before, as far as you're zeroing your gun, you have any
Right.
problems? People are constantly very open to loaning and helping each other out.
No, absolutely. And I think there's a big difference. I mean, the PRS is there and it's designed to find out who the best shooter is in the country, in the world, or whatever that they're doing. But there's a lot of people watching, there's a lot of pressure. There's, like you said, there's a sea of spotting scopes up watching everything that's happening. So it's very much a NASCAR style of the sport, where the NRL Hunter. Yes, it's absolutely fantastic to win a trophy, and you work hard to win those trophies. But I've also seen when strangers or people that you might have just met that weekend ask, come up and ask you a question, and you are the politest, most helpful person in the world. But I've also seen it, not, I don't know if distract is the right word, but it pulls you out of that zone. So I can't say for sure that it's cost you placement,
Right,
but.
sure.
In my mind, if you were just left alone to play your game, you would just be phenomenal at everything that you do.
But you know, it's a privilege to help other people, right? I
I
mean,
agree.
like I
Yeah,
said before,
that's what it's
it's
about.
paying it forward. So yeah, I like being able to help people and make them, you know, be successful so they want to come out and do it more.
Right.
Right. So we can build the sport and we get really, you know, the target getting the youth in to this, right, and get them shooting and enjoying the outdoors and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been a great ride, and I'm looking forward to this next year. I really am. I mean, I love what we do here, and it's great to go out there and you know, time starts now, right? And you run up
Right.
there and say, man, where are my targets?
Right.
It's like, wait a minute, you tell me there's a 2 foot by 2 foot placard out there and I can't even find the placard. But you know, it's that initial 30 seconds of panic, right? And but that skill set there, right? Just finding animals and knowing how to use your equipment and you know, to be able to search, you know, your search patterns, how you're looking for targets out there, the same thing you would do for animals. And so
So
that translates real well.
I want to talk about how it translates, but I'm curious how you search when you're glassing, because I've heard different theories on and different ways that successful people do it. I'm curious what your method is.
You know, the first thing is I make sure I'm really solid on your pin, right? So I know the parameters I need to be able to search. Then I'll get a quick visual of looking, you know, out across the terrain.
Okay.
And then when I
Naked
get on
eye.
it, I try and search a pattern, right? And what I'll normally do is I'll do a grill search first. And what I'm doing is I'm constantly hitting my range finder. So, you know, if all of a sudden I hit something that's over 1,000 yards, like, nope, that hillside's too far. You need to come on in, right?
Right.
And then I start breaking it down to shadows. So I look for shadows if I'm struggling, because sometimes where the sun's at, the target or the placard may be just inside the sun or inside
Right.
those shadows, and it's just hard to pick up, right? So I started looking for shadows next. So I just kind of
Awesome.
break it down
Okay.
that way. I do a grill search first. I do it again real quick, and I go in, I look hard at the shadows and on the side of things, like the
When
side of a
you're
tree, right in front of a tree, because sometimes your target can blend into it, right? or your placard may blend into it. So, yeah.
When you're doing your initial growth search, do you start near to far or far to near, or is there not really a
I usually start midway. I'll look like, I say sometimes like we can see the train and maybe it's 3 or 4 yards away and we're shooting at rams or something like that. It's like I'll probably start looking for the placard first, and that's what I'm really searching for hard is the placard. And
right.
then that's why I start searching those shadows, but I can't immediately find the targets.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool. Very
Yeah, and
cool.
sometimes I can see the placards, you just kind of look in the general area. It's like that kind of looks like a placard. My vision's got worse over the, as we get older, it deteriorates some. But I mean, I've watched like, Garrett Long, right, from Meteor.
Yep.
Man, that dude is, he's finding the targets like within 15, 20 seconds. It's
Yeah,
just
he's
amazing his ability to find. But he's a big hunter, right? I mean,
right.
they hunt so much. And you can tell that skill they have is, man, it's locked in tight. They know how to search, and they things stand out to them real quick. And that dude can find targets.
You can, and it's crazy how, there's certain guys like that that do hunt all the time. You see the guys that are typically the most successful in NRL hunter, they are true hunters.
Yeah,
That's
they hunt a lot. Yeah,
they hunt a
absolutely.
lot. I mean, Matt Allwine, John Pidge, Garrett Long, yourself, or Paul Dollins. I mean, all of these guys hunt quite a bit, right? It's funny because when I first started hunting, I one of my big trips was with Paul Dollin. And he's like, "Oh yeah, there's this and this over there." And I'm like, "I
Yeah,
don't see
yeah,
shit, bro."
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah. Have you ever
"What
been
are
to
you
his
talking
range?
about?"
Have you ever been to his range in
Oh
Utah?
yeah.
It's
Yeah.
crazy, right? I mean,
It's
he's got
insane.
mountains full of
Yeah.
targets everywhere. It's like,
Yeah.
yeah,
It's an adult's Disneyland.
it is absolutely, yeah. And Casey Pratt has the other side of that with the 3-gun stuff and the
Right.
turf out there. It's the first time I ever shot on turf, right? It's like, so yeah, Paul. I didn't see Paul very much this year. He's just real busy work and stuff. But man, that dude can crush.
He
It's like amazing.
he was super focused on, I'm not super focused. He was super busy with work, but then he was super focused on the 22 World Championships, which happened to be, I think, like 2 weeks after the Grand Slam. So
Oh, okay.
his focus was going to the World Championships in Italy. And so, he has a lot of time and money invested in the 22 side as well. And I think he took second overall world champion.
Wow.
Yeah, and
Yeah, he's
he lost it
amazing.
by time. Tied score.
Really?
He lost it by like a couple seconds or something like that. I think I don't remember exactly the time, but just seconds.
Yeah, that's crazy. There are some phenomenal shooters out there. I mean, I've watched Matt and John, some of those guys, and stuff. And they do something that's like, wow, that's impressive. It's like guys
Yeah.
took a lot to learn, right? They're just
It's
they're and they're
scary.
great people. They're just
Yeah.
they are they're really good people. And I
Absolutely.
guess some of their things equipment wise, that I see some people, get you a good bipod. But again, as you progress, I guess I don't want to say buy, don't stay out of the shooting because you don't think you have the best equipment.
Right.
I mean, you just get it out there and shoot what you have. But as you progress, good set of binos, tripod's important. A good bipod. I think ArcaRail is really the way to go if your gun system is set up for it, because it just allows you to move everything so easy. On
Absolutely.
it's kind of it taking over like sling studs and all that stuff is. We used to shoot people with muzzleloaders, still can, right? I just prefer
Right.
not to, right? So yeah, we take advantage of that technology is out there. So you start slowly upgrading because the stuff I have right now. I knew I wanted to get into this, and I actually bought my stuff over like a 3 or 4 year period. I
Okay.
knew I couldn't go out and compete a bunch in it, but I look and research and say, okay, that's an important piece of kit, and I'd save up and buy that. And, so it wasn't like I could just go out and get it. And you
Right.
just save a little bit of time here and there, and so that makes a big difference. And there's factory guns that just hammer on, like the Seikens and Tikkas and. There's different guns out there. The Ruger American. I've seen guys out there shooting those, just crushing targets. So you can be real competitive, going out there and buy factory guns that you like and go out there and shoot them and compete.
Well, it's funny because you just mentioned technology. I mean, 5 years ago, I don't know, maybe a little bit longer, 7 years ago, a factory rifle was sufficient, but it wasn't considered a precision rifle, right? It was just it was a rifle. Nowadays, a lot of the factory companies, like you said, Seikens, Tika, the Sig Cross, Bergaras, these rifles coming straight from the factory, in my opinion, would classify as a precision rifle and hold, I mean, good enough groupings from the factory to be very competitive in the NRL hunter, but also to be very ethical in the hunt.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're half inch guns, right? Half
Yeah.
minute guns, an inch gun, no problem. And the technology they have, and what I like you're saying, I've got a gun now that I use all the time. I use it on shoot coyotes, I use it for deer hunting, elk hunting, antelope, stuff like that. So it's something that translates across. The PRS is, again, they're kind of like NASCAR, right? They're, heavy guns and stuff like that, but
Right.
they're pushing the envelope all the time. It's kind of like the open shooters in the three gun world. We put red dots on handguns and all that stuff 25 years ago, and now it's common carry to have a red dot on your handgun.
Yes,
So,
sir.
but they developed that technology because they're always pushing the envelope, and be able to take that and take it back to the manufacturers and help them make a better product for the end user. And the NRL hunters, like, you can grab your dad's gun and go out there and shoot and have a smoking good time, man. I
Yes,
mean,
sir.
it's yeah, and just learn so much.
It's more of a practical way to get proficient with your firearm and the gear that you use.
Yeah, absolutely. How you pack it, it's a it's funny, people don't, people, you first talk to them, it's like 4 minutes, and it's like, wow, that went by quick.
Yeah.
You think it's a lot of time, but you've got to be really proficient. And when you see the guys, they've got a good system down, they're just nice and smooth.
Right.
They're just so smooth that everything they're doing, the house up, and there's been a lot of times when I've been hunting and I wasted time trying to set up and spooked the animal, the wind changed, lost that opportunity to be able to engage it. So yeah, it translates real well. Everything that we're doing, it's good stuff.
I think so as well. And it's funny, when we started, when we introduced NRL Hunter, we started to have a lot of the PRS style shooters come over to the NRL Hunter and they learned that it was 4 minutes. They're like, that's too much time because they're used to shooting, 90 seconds or whatever it is, right? But all of the information is given, oh, I'm out of focus. All of the information is given to them before they even step foot on that clock. So it's a different game, right?
Yeah, completely. And there's a big skill set in finding targets and then also finding your shooting positions on the fly,
Right.
right? I mean, I'm looking at a pile of rocks and trees and how it's the natural terrain, and it's like you're doing it completely on the fly. So that's a game changer in itself, because if I have time to sit back and look at something, I can probably figure out a good stable shooting platform.
Right.
When you're doing it on the clock, it's like, and then it's funny, right? You get in that position and it's not as solid as you thought, but you're scared to move because you don't know if you're gonna have enough time. So
Right.
it's like, yeah, it's a constant battle, but that's, doing it on the fly is a good skill. You learn how to see things faster, pick up on it. And when you're practicing, it pushes you out of the envelope of being able to practice more.
Right.
Right, of the different positions, because rarely you're going to shoot prone. I mean, if I can shoot prone, I usually do pretty good, and but rarely do you get to in the mountains in a hunting situation.
Very true. Very true. So, with hunting, how has this or has it made you a better hunter?
It's made me a lot more precise. My precision game is improved, and with the accuracy that we have now with the guns and stuff like that. And just a lot more proficient at using all my gear together, right? I mean, there's absolutely no guesswork of, I know where my bullet's going to strike. I can see the environmental conditions a lot better. I know when it's like, that's not that type of shot in that terrain with the environment is too risky. You need to get closer. So it's made me pull back on, not shooting a game when I know the environmental conditions are iffy and you can't tell across canyons and stuff like that. So you just wait. It's like, yeah, I could hit that target someplace. I could hit that animal someplace, but I could not guarantee an ethical kill. So I just don't shoot the shot.
Right. And that's, I think that's a sign of maturity. And I think a sign of experience as well, which I guess is kind of sometimes the same thing, because there's a lot of guys that I've talked to that go out and hunt and they get that buck fever. They get so excited to finally get an animal in their crosshairs that they take that shot without having 100% confidence of knowing where that round's going to go. So, yeah. And that's scary, right? I mean, it's that feeling of having to track an animal, not knowing if it's down or if it's wounded, to me was, you know, I've had that once during an archery deal. My first archery buck in Arizona, and that hour that we had to wait before I could track it because it didn't drop, it was the worst hour in a long time that I've had.
Yeah, true. I mean, you know, it's like you take archery and, you know, I can hit a target out there 100 yards. I could never make it, guarantee a good shot at that distance on an animal.
Right.
So it's just, you know, it's, but it allows me to be able to shoot a target at 50 yards a lot easier. And, you know, that's, again, it's being ethical about what you're trying to do. And that's, you know, that's for that individual to be able to call. But with the technology we have now, you know, you see people who go out there and they'll buy the gun and they, somebody teaches them how to run the ballistic software and true their gun up and stuff, but they don't go out and spend any time shooting the gun or getting proficient with the gun. So then they go out there and they shoot an animal and a lot of times they wound them, right? They get away. They can hit it someplace. So they have just enough knowledge to be dangerous, right?
Right.
But they're not experienced to be able to put it all together. So I kind of hoard that information on, you know, people who are just going to, they just won't go fill a tag. You know, if they're not going to put the time to become proficient at shooting an animal at 500-700 yards away, then I don't want to tell them how to solve that problem. Right. So I can, if they're not going to put the time in to actually go and shoot a gun.
If they don't care enough about what they're doing to be better, then it's hard to want to help them. You know, but there's guys that are so excited and all they want to do is absorb that knowledge. And I tend to kind of barf as much as I can at them because they're absorbing it and they implement it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So hey, I got a quick question for you. Can you tell people how many matches we're going to have?
So about the same number of matches out west. We're adding a match in Texas. We're adding a match in New Mexico. So those are, you know, New Mexico's more west, I guess. So that'll be a new one out west. We're adding two matches in Canada, so have your passport ready. And then we got a handful of new matches down in the Southeast.
Oh, nice. Good. That's fantastic.
So the Grand Slam's going to be in Decorah, Idaho. Or Iowa, sorry. Decorah, Iowa, Jim C's place.
Okay.
So Jim has a new piece of property that he's got the lease to put a match. So I don't have all of the details as far as how it's going to be split up, but he's got a whole new chunk of land that nobody's been on yet. I don't know if he's going to hold anything before the Grand Slam there or not, but as of right now, nobody's been on that land. And it's have you ever been to his match?
I've never been out there. No.
Okay. So Decorah, Idaho, it's a beautiful, beautiful rolling hills country, trees, great deer population out there. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Great fishing. I always fish when I'm out there. And Jim puts on a good match. He's old school, you know, PRS, been doing this for a long time, and he's really embraced the NRL hunter. And he's gonna, so Jim has been known to make things fun and interesting, and he kind of pushes the limits, and I appreciate that about him 100%. And people know that about him. For his championship, for the championship, he is going to make a match for the people. So no gimmicks, just a lot of fun, a great, straight up, good fun match is what he's told me he's planning.
It's great. You know, I know all the two last championships we've had, both, you know, Colin just put on and, you know, Brian, those guys put in Idaho. I mean, for the Grand Slam, they were fantastic. Man, it was straight up, shooting, finding the targets, right? You had to work to find the targets. They were very findable. You know, they just do a fantastic job. And I'll tell you that I'm looking forward to Cody again. I hope Gunworks, are they
Oh, they're on.
man, you know, for all you guys out there, the ones you didn't make that, I hate telling you because, you know, don't want to overpopulate that area, but yeah, Sheep Mountain, I mean, that was incredible. That's the only place we've shot where we've had, you know, those type of angles. You know, other
Yes.
places we shoot, we got some angle of fire and stuff like that, but man, shooting up there in Colby off that plateau up there on top of Sheep Mountain, that was amazing. That was stellar. Everybody there, it's like they just never had that opportunity, right? It's
No,
like
and
that was
most people
fantastic.
don't ever get that opportunity to shoot those kind of angles. And so
Yeah.
it's a whole new learning curve for a lot of people.
Yeah, it really is. And that was a fantastic match. That's someone I will definitely make again, for sure.
That match, that whole Cody area, when I went up there the first time several years ago for when Philip Vallejo did a match for us several years ago, I fell in love with that area. It's just absolutely beautiful. And then that Sheep Mountain venue, I mean, we were literally in the clouds. We were above the clouds
Yeah.
shooting. And so we were on that one, flat part where we were shooting down, the first day, and we had those mountains behind us.
Yeah.
That whole mountainside behind us, I think they're trying to get that for next year.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing. We could shoot both directions. But man, for people who didn't go out there, it is absolutely stunningly beautiful. And then, you know, take a couple extra days and go through the park. You're right outside the park. You know, there's lots of places up in Cody. I mean, it's just a great place. And all the places we shot was fantastic. It's just Cody has that terrain where they can, you know, you get those steep angle of fire. I think we steepest angle we shot out there is 34 degrees.
Was it 34?
Yeah, 34 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Closer target, but
Yeah,
yeah,
still.
it was great. Yeah, it's like this
So,
is awesome.
yeah, it was definitely one of the most beautiful venues I've been to, for sure. For sure.
Well, every one of them is breathtaking.
Yes.
So, really appreciate you putting these things on, man. And I can't believe how much you have to travel, but glad you
Well,
do it.
so I mean, I've talked about it a little bit. Obviously, you've sent me lots of texts and messages and whatnot. We just had a baby. So next year I will be my goal is to get every new match and every major match. So I won't be attending every single match just because I mean, literally we have some matches on the West Coast and the East Coast the same weekends.
Yeah.
So just no way to do it, but Brittany's excited to be a part of everything, and we're already talking with some of the other team or not team members but competitors that have kids about NRL daycare.
That's
Get
great, man. That's awesome.
the kids out there playing while mom or dad's out there shooting, so
Yeah.
it'll be good. It'll be a lot of fun. But this season, do you have any hunts planned this year? Are you getting after it, or gonna take it
You
easy
know,
this
for big game this year, don't have anything really planned. Going to do a lot of fishing, and I'm going to do a lot of predator hunting. So, we
year?
had such a bad winter. I mean, I actually went in to put in for some draws, and man, our winter here was so horrible. It killed so many animals. I'm like, I'm going to give them a break this year, right? So, hold back on that. But the predators really thrived, right? When you have a bad winter, they really thrive, and
Yeah,
so.
they do great.
We're
So
going to go
predators,
slay a
you
bunch.
want
We're going to go slay a bunch of dogs.
coyotes or wolves?
Both, anyone I can find. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we're going to put all this knowledge to use.
I was also told that there's a wolf bounty in Idaho.
Oh yeah, there is. Yeah, I know people who are doing it. I mean, you can actually hunt them with thermals. You know, you
Anytime
can
of year?
well, nighttime. No, just the wolves, right?
Oh, okay, catch you.
Yeah. But yeah, that all changed because there's so many, right? There's such a problem, and they're such a smart animal. I mean, you take like people who trap, you know, like bobcats are easy to trap, and fox are a little bit harder. Coyotes are a lot harder than a fox, and wolves are on a whole different level.
Really?
Mean, they're just that intelligent. Yeah.
And they're a pack animal, so I mean that can't work to your advantage. That's got to be, make it more difficult.
Yeah, they're a pack animal and they cover a lot of ground. And they're, where they know they can be hunted and stuff, they get pretty elusive. They're kind of like a ghost. They know you're there, people hear them, howling, stuff like that. Or, a lot of times, my nephew Shane, he shoots Shane Cooley and stuff, and he's up in the mountains a lot and he runs hounds and stuff like that. But he can't believe how many, wolf kills he finds. They'll push him down the bottoms and kill him, and stuff like that. So
Wow, okay.
they're really proficient, doing what they do. And they're just hard to find. They kind of work a big area, like elk. Elk will work a big, area, but just because they're so big, as far as like two or three canyons, and their patterns are way bigger than a whitetail and stuff. But then the wolves follow those, right? And so they go all over the place. And so they may be in this canyon one day and not come back to it for 10 days, but they'll kind of get a pattern where they'll come back in that same area, but maybe 8 days or 12 days or something like that, where they kind of rotate through their hunting grounds, I guess you could say.
Interesting. Yeah, I've never seen a wolf in the wild. So it'll, maybe I'll see one out there. Who knows? If
Yeah,
I
we've
see
got quite a
one.
few. Yeah, there's a
Yeah.
bunch. Yeah, it's crazy. It used to be, elk bugling all the time. You'll know if there's wolves in the areas because elk just won't bugle.
Okay.
They just,
Yeah, I
they know if
was
I bugle, wolves show up and they kind of
right.
just stay quiet.
It's kind of a dinner bell for him.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they tune into it, sure.
I was told because I've got a Weiser River tag, a Weiser River B, so and then a Unit 32 tag for the deer. I was told that area had a ton of wolves and bear and stuff like
Yeah,
that.
they do. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, this last winter, I mean, they thrived. It's Sun Valley, Haley, Ketchum area.
Right.
They've got a lot of problems with mountain lions come down, like right now. Mountain lions and black bears, seen them down in Haley and Ketchum and stuff in the mountain,
Wow, okay.
which, I mean, you see a mountain lion daytime, it's like that's not a good sign. It usually means he's probably hunting you, right?
Right.
But a lot of the people think that the reason why is because so many of the big game died during the winter, right?
So
They're
they're
just
scavenging.
hungry. There's no prey, and they can't catch them now, and
Right.
there's not very many of them to catch, and so it's push them into where they're hunting cats and dogs and
Right.
scavenging and stuff like that. So
It becomes a big problem.
but the population of predators, this is a year to hunt them. There's a bunch out there. There's a bunch who made it, right? And they thrived really well. So their litters probably survived real well.
Right.
Boosted the pack and stuff like that. In
Which
fact,
is
right
why
now,
you're.
we just had coyotes outside our door last night. So I'm standing out there with my night vision on at 3:30 in the morning, right? Wait, thinking they're gonna come in by the front yard because we got cats and stuff like that. I was like, don't let them eat our cats. So I'm standing out there, in my underwear with my suppressed rifle, right? And my nods on, waiting for the coyotes. They never showed up, but anyway, we'll get to them later.
That's funny. That's a funny visual. You out with night vision in your underwear and a suppressed rifle. That's a three gun logo if I've seen one.
For sure, man. Absolutely.
So, no, that's awesome. So that makes sense why you're focusing on predator hunting this year then. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great, right? You get out in the mountains and stuff, and it's just good to be out there and stuff. And you gotta have your game on, to be able to get them and stuff like that. So it's good, it's fun, it's challenging. Doing everything from thermals at night to daytime hunting calls and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Very cool.
But hey, remember? I mean, I had a killer tag about 8 years ago for deer. And it was right after a really, really bad winter.
Right.
It just wiped out everything. I mean, I saw only one mature buck in like 30 days of hunting.
Ouch.
Yeah, like a where you had does and stuff like that,
Yeah.
and a good mature buck, and where it was year before that snowfall and stuff that we had. It wasn't nothing to go out and see 20, 25 bucks, at least 10 or 15 bucks a day.
Oh,
It
okay.
just killed them all. So, I mean, I'm just saying you're going out after a real hard winter. So it's
Right.
not really, represent of what you'd have in a normal year out here.
A normal year. It's crazy. But before I go to come out to Idaho to see you, I'm going on a doe hunt in Missouri, and I'm using a old Octagon 4570 lever gun. And this
that
thing
is cool. My,
my right, this thing weighs more than my rifle does. My yeah. precision rifle.
That thing will hammer.
Yeah, and this is a what is this? I can't even remember who makes this. This is the Japanese made Winchesters, and it's a takedown.
That's a takedown.
This is a, yeah, wow. it's a takedown. I have to see
that is so freaking great.
This up, you twist this off, and it separates.
You know, it's funny. You know, you talk about all these different guns, and you know, because I've been shooting my whole life, work and stuff like that. What I do, and tied into training and stuff. But you know, a lot of people talk about all these different type of guns. Like, dude, I'm not a collector, right? It's like right. I know the guns I have to work with, compete with, and hunt with. But I mean, there's so many guns out there that's like, don't have a clue about it.
Yeah,
fun to shoot, but yeah, I don't, not a collector.
I'm pretty much the same way. I've like I, because I'm able to travel so much. When I see something cool, I get into it or whatnot. But mm-hmm. I mean, I'm also stuck in California, so there's a lot of cool shit that we don't even get to touch or have. So,
yeah. So here's something you need to do, right? That's a beautiful wood stock you have on that. Yeah.
Yes.
So take a really cool picture, and then engrave that into your stock, and you give that to one of your kids, right?
Later that's a cool idea.
Yeah, I actually did that with a custom rifle my dad had before he passed and stuff, and had a picture of an elk that he killed with it and stuff, and got a real good picture and just engraved it in the stock and turned out fantastic. Great thing to be able to pass down to your kids, right?
Absolutely.
And be able to, you know, a gun that you want to keep in the family and stuff like that. It's way cool. That'd be a cool thing to do for your kids, your grandkids.
That would be really, really cool. That would be fun because this hunt, we're actually, so Isaiah Curtis, one of our master directors and competitors, he is doing a deer camp. It's a doe only season that Missouri just started. And there's five or six of us going up, but we all have to use rifles that came out over 100 years ago. So we're all shooting lever actions. Iron sights, we can't use optics.
Yeah, it'll get the job done, man. You can.
Yeah.
I've seen guys shoot those lever actions. Like, amazing how well they can shoot them fast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. But this particular rifle, you know, when it was made, there's no rubber cushion on the stock. It's the metal, you know, the metal finish that they used to do back in the day. So, you know,
because you had to hit people with the buttstock.
Yeah, right.
You want full impact with that thing, man. If you're gonna have to hit somebody with it,
right? Yeah, so it'll be a good time
for you guys.
Yeah, but man, I've taken up quite a bit of your time. Is there anything that you want to say or questions that you have? Or
no, I mean, you know, it's like it's just good to be able to visit with you. You know, appreciate all you do for the NRL Hunter Series. It's like without you, you know, it wouldn't have blossomed and come to be like it has. And it's just growing. And that just goes to your leadership, you know, when you're out there working with all the range masters and match directors and, you know, herding us cats around the ranges. So thank you and your wife. You know, we miss seeing her, and congrats on your little one. And really looking forward to be able to continue to do this. You know, it's a great sport. And it, like I said, it translates perfically to hunting, you know, up in your game. Getting outside, getting in the mountains, you know, and you know, in the old days, right, hunting was a recreational sport, right? It's how people got together and did stuff. And it's great to see this type of sport come back and, you know, be so applicable, you know, to what the majority of what the manufacturers are making out there for people to go out and use and shoot. Yes, now they can actually practice and get their skill sets up and be better hunters and outdoorsmen and, you know, keep spreading the gospel, I guess.
We're trying, and with any luck, it'll continue to blossom and grow. And I mean, it's been an amazing adventure, and it's just, you know, we're just getting started. We're only a couple of years old, so we had a long way to go, and it's you know, it's gonna be an awesome adventure with you there with us.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Really am, and thanks for all your help and all that you do. Seriously, Travis, you guys knock it out of the park. So thank you.
Likewise, we couldn't do it with good people without good people like you. So thank you.
Tell that beautiful wife hi. Hold that baby high.
Tell your family I said hi as well. And we look forward to seeing you in a couple of months. I don't know if I'll see you in Arizona or a SHOT Show, but that's where I'll be at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go to Arizona. It'll be the first time making that match. So I'm hoping I can get out there.
That's a match that you'll love. Josh and Mark put on a fantastic match.
Yeah, that's right. Although I would be very disappointed going out there this last year and it being snowed on. Kidding me.
that was crazy, and that was out of season. But this year the weather's been crazy. I mean, Arizona, we got snow. California, we had a 75-year storm hit us. The Missouri match, we had tornado warning during the Missouri match.
Wow.
I mean, it's just been a crazy year for weather. So hopefully it's not that way next year, but that's hunting. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, true, man. It's like, I want to go back and sit in the tent.
Is there a stage where we sit in a tent with a stove?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Grand Slam, actually, when we got socked in, right? A couple groups built fires. Yeah. It's like, let's start a fire. We're going to be here for a while. So,
yeah, I saw pictures of that. I mean, that was a 3-hour, you know, fog delay. It's crazy, crazy weather this year. So,
yeah. Good times, though.
Yeah, definitely good times. But Benny, man, I really appreciate you and everything that you do. And you are such a fantastic ambassador of the sport, of the shooting sports. And as I've always told you, whatever I can do to help you in any way, I'm here for you. I'm at your disposal. But I appreciate you very much.
Likewise, my friend. You take care.
You too. For everybody that tuned in today or tonight, thank you so much for listening. Again, Mr. Benny Cooley. Until next time, be safe, keep shooting, and we'll see you on the match. Take care.
Adios.